You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us and send a donation anytime at KBOO Radio. That's at KBOO Radio. Thanks.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, and we are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. I'm a public school teacher, and my co-host Rachel is also a public school teacher. Unfortunately, she isn't with us here today for this interview. Typically, we are on the second Monday of the month. We interview educators. We talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we've got two guests on the line. We've got Tanya Kapner and Mark Ergood. Welcome.
Hi.
Hello.
Well, why don't you start by just telling us a little bit about yourselves, your current jobs, and what got you into this work as educators?
Okay. Well, we are both longtime activists in the Oakland Education Association in Oakland, California, with our caucus that's in both the National Education Association and American Federation of Teachers. It's the Equal Opportunity Now, By Any Means Necessary Caucus, Teachers Caucus. And I've been in Oakland schools probably almost 30 years now, and currently teaching at the same school as Mark here. We fought hard, our caucus, for COVID safety and established a online option for students who need and want it for safety or bullying reasons. And so we're both working currently in a middle school that's fully online. That's one of the big online, main, fully public school education options that exists in California. So we're both longtime teachers in the Oakland public schools.
Yeah, as Tanya said, this is Mark. As Tanya said, I'm also been teaching like 25 years in Oakland. We're both teaching now at the virtual school, Sojourner Truth. Before a couple of years ago, before the COVID pandemic, I taught special education for most of my career in Oakland. And, you know, as with Tanya, I've made a number of fights around a variety of issues, but one of the main focuses for me has been defense of the special education programs and students and really fighting for, the resources that we need for special education. That's been kind of one of my particular focuses over the years.
Great. And do either of you currently hold any positions or elected office in your union?
We're both site representatives for our school and delegates to the National Education Association Conference. I've served on the executive board and, you know, resolutions for the national union and things in the past, but not currently other than that for me.
Yeah, not the same here. And I'm not currently holding. I've been secretary and treasurer of the Oakland Education Association, but I am not currently.
Great. All right. Well, wanted to have you on because you all Oakland was in getting a fair amount of press and attention. So you were in the spotlight last month. So start by telling our listeners though about the Oakland community, about your students before we get into the strike.
Oakland is historically a majority Black city that's dealt with a lot of different issues with, you know, gentrification and expensive housing. It's a very integrated group of students in our public schools, Black, Latino, Latinx. We have many students from Yemen and other places and Middle Eastern places. We have a lot of immigrant students from all over the world, many Asian students in our schools. It's a mix. And it's also a very long time pro-union town, you know, with fights, everything from the longshoremen there at our Port of Oakland to a real history of many teachers' strikes that have been fully supported by our communities. So it's a very politically savvy community that's very determined to fight, you know, racism and stand up for public education and with the unions.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add is Oakland, as Tanya said, is very known for its progressive politics and fight back. You know, we often make the news from our, you know, demonstrations and, you know, our fight for the justice for Oscar Grant and a whole, you know, variety of campaigns. And I think that's really shared by, you know, our students and the vast majority of Oakland. So it's a very exciting place to live and teach. One point on the schools, I taught for over 20 years at Edna Brewer Middle School, one of the middle schools in Oakland, which was very a very integrated school. And I think there are, not all schools in Oakland are integrated. There's many that are either majority Black or majority Latino. But there are a whole number of schools that are quite integrated in Oakland. Certainly our virtual school now is very integrated. And I think that's a particular strength of Oakland schools and the community of Oakland is the integration.
Yeah.
But we are always fighting for resources and being very disrespected by the school administrations, you know, and so it's always a fight really against the separate unequal conditions of, you know, like some schools having more privilege than others and really fighting for every student's right to get the resources they deserve is an ongoing struggle in Oakland. Yeah.
Is there an affluent part of Oakland or is it mostly?
Yes. We have hills. We have the hills communities that overlook the bay and are much more expensive to live in than what we call our flatlands.
Yeah. Okay. So again, before we get to this, into the strike, because a lot of times, you know, the strike is really what people get excited about hearing about. And I think it's important to understand what led to it, what sort of, you know, what prepared you for it. So as you began bargaining, what were the primary issues that you wanted to try to address in the contract that would support your community? And then also, and additionally, you can talk about compensation and working conditions, but maybe just start with the primary issues of the community that you wanted to try to address, right? Because you were bargaining for the common good, as it is called. So tell us about that.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we were fighting for, I mean, this is really a struggle for ongoingly our communities had to fight against school closures and against a lot of resources being given to charter schools instead of the public schools. So we were fighting, the common good demands were really all the demands for public education and not just the financial side of things for our members as teachers and educators, but it was for, you know, like being able to bargain stopping school closures, being able to actually have some language around class size reduction in there, demanding resources for majority Black and Brown schools and, you know, issues like Mark raised around special education. There's a whole series of demands, and it was really a fight for the union and the community to have power over those issues, those educational issues of, you know, public education, and not just have it be just a bread and butter issue of very real concern of compensation for teachers because people are stacked up in bunk beds and can't afford to live in the Bay Area at the salaries we make, which is way less than, you know, anything comparable, that really any comparable community. It's just hugely expensive. So that was real, but the common good demands were the focus of the community's concerns for public education.
The only thing I add to that is that one of the main fights that we had in the lead up to the strike was the really pretense, the claim by the school board and their negotiators that they were not going to negotiate with the union, that they just flat out refused to negotiate with the OEA, really on anything, but in particular on any of the common good demands. And this is something we've seen in other cities across the country, and certainly in Britain right now with the huge strike wave. That's a position of many of the management is we will not negotiate with the union. And we proved that, you know, but that went on for months. And it really took the strike to prove that, oh, yes, you are going to negotiate with the union. That was really, in a city like Oakland or really most cities, there's no way that management is in a position just to say, oh, no, we don't have to negotiate with the union anymore. But that was in itself a victory to force them to negotiate.
Yeah, I mean, that's great, right? They'll say, well, these are permissive is the technical word, which, you know, in layman's terms means sort of optional, right? And so typically, yeah, districts are saying we're not required to bargain those issues, and so we're not going to, right? So, and also just for our listeners who are in Oregon, you might hear our guests refer to OEA. They are talking about Oakland Education Association, not yes, Oregon Education Association. Yes. So as best as you can, I realize that it's, you know, it was over the course of many months, but as best you can you sort of walk us through some of the timeline of some of the things that happened leading up to the strike? Because again, like I said earlier, it's not like all of a sudden, poof, you just went on strike. So what were some of the activities or things that that OEA was doing to try to put some pressure on the district to bargain?
I can just start this one just because I have a very brief answer to that, which is the one answer is it was very rapid. We did not really seriously start talking about strike action until just before spring break. So it was like the March. It was end of April, basically in April, that we even started talking about it and really ramping up. And it really was coming out of what I mentioned earlier, that the district had refused to bargain anything, wages, you know, common good, anything for months upon months. And we could see the clock running on a school year running out, and really felt like we had to take action. So in my experience, like we struck in 2019 and we had a big lead up to that strike. We struck in January, I believe, February. And, you know, that we did all sorts of activities leading up to it. This moved very, very rapidly. The thing I can think of, there was, and this was not even sponsored by the OEA, Oakland Education Association, officially, but there was a sick out prior to the strike. And there were, you know, obviously school board rallies and things like that, but it was a very rapid buildup.
Yeah, the contract had expired in October, and, you know, people were just sick of the disrespect, and really a push was really coming from the members that there has to be action this year. And it ended up being an incredibly strong strike, despite how quickly it was organized as compared to our previous organizing. I mean, the tremendous support of the community and the members of the Oakland Education Association and parents and the students, it was ended up being just hugely stronger. I've been in many strikes ever since 1996 in our schools in Oakland, and this was like a strong strike and a joyous strike. This was the dancingest strike I have ever seen, because especially, you know, young teachers, you know, fighting for their rights and coming out of COVID are just saying, no, we deserve to be able to stay in this profession and job and afford to live here and represent our students' interests. And all generations of the teachers and the community just really stood together strong on a short timeline, as Mark said.
How were you all, what do you know about how the community was getting information or being invited to be a part of this? What sort of efforts are you aware of that?
A lot of it was really school by school and the teachers disseminating the information to their parents and their communities and their students. We had, you know, a large bargaining team of like 50 some people, and they were getting out information to, you know, like our site representatives were getting it out to everybody in their school, was getting it out to the parents. I mean, it was really just a very ground up effort to get that information out quickly. And also the community just got it quick, you know, because this is a community that saw teachers going back into terribly unsafe conditions really prematurely during the pandemic and going through being sick time and time again and still sticking in there with their kids. And, you know, just that people were just very clear in the community when they got the information from the teachers at the school site level. I mean, of course, we have a representative council, one representative for every 15 members and so on that was getting out information. But the community was just in touch with people at the school sites really quite a lot, quite quickly.
The I think this is not just Oakland. I think this is true. When teachers go out on strike, the level of community support, family support, student support is just tremendous. And so we had gone out in 2019 and had mass marches through Oakland with people lining the sidewalks. I mean, they were massive, thousands and thousands of people out. And so I think there's a history of Oakland of striking, of the teachers striking, which is very helpful. And the support is just at this and this in any of our public actions, you could not even really talk to the teacher next to you because of all the horns honking of cars going by. I mean, the level of support is really fantastic. It's really everybody feels the power that we have, and the community really knows that our fight is the fight for the future for the young people of Oakland. And so that was like, anybody who didn't know the first day, there might have been a few people who didn't know there was going to be a strike, but you know, by day two, there's nobody coming in. There's just massive support all over the city.
And Tanya, not to get too much into the weeds here, but I believe I heard you say that you said 50 people on the 50 members on the bargaining team. That's a big bargaining team.
Yeah, and that was a long time that members had been demanding that for a long time, and it actually has been going on for like 10 years or more, people wanting a very open bargaining process with more members, you know.
Yeah.
So there was some more information getting out from folks on that bargaining team, you know, but in the end, really, the question came down to what do we accept or not accept? You know, and there was a lot more a lot more debate, which we'll get into at the end there.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio, and we rely on you, our listeners, for sustaining us financially. We don't take corporate money, so please go to kboo.fm and give to donate. So let's get into the strike. Tell us about how the days went, if there were particular highlights for you. You already sort of gave us a...
Well, I was picket captain at my school, so I can just give you like one example. You know, I mean, about 5 o'clock, I'm up and out, and, you know, I went to the school that I'd worked at for 20 years to help them out with their early shift of their picket line because they were a big school with many entrances. That was Oakland Tech. And then we start our picket lines actually a nice late 7 a.m. We were two school sites together, Sojourner Truth and Rudsdale, which is a newcomer school for mostly immigrant students and also has an opportunity program, an alternative education school. And we had both of us share a school site. So we had everybody out there on the picket line together for the school day. And then community marches during the day, which were from all over the city or sometimes regionally, as Mark was saying, with tons of support. And then we repeated each day. But what our school in particular was wonderful because we have, you know, many folks that have to be online participating while striking. So we had twice a day meetings with our folks that couldn't be there physically for health reasons or whatever on Zoom. And we had invited parents and students to be on our Zoom support the strike meetings while they were on strike there. And those of us that could be physically on the picket line were there. And we had a lot of unity. So we had publicized, televised to all our parents and students that wanted to see every day our picket lines also, as well as, of course, inviting community members out to the line. And students came, many students also from the Rudsdale School came out to support on the picket lines with us and so on. So it was picket lines in the morning and through and until community marches in the afternoon, generally.
I could tell one story, which is one of the final days of the strike. We had a community march down from the from Lake Merritt, which is at the center of Oakland, down the streets downtown, and it was massive. And we were marched to City Hall, Oscar Grant Plaza, in front of City Hall, and we got to City Hall the march, and somebody had rented out Oscar Grant Plaza, and they had temporary fencing surrounding the entire plaza where we were headed. And trucks there unloading whatever they were unloading, and people, you know, from there running out saying, "Oh no, you can't use it. We've rented it out." And I'd just say it took about 3 minutes, and the fencing was opened up, and the march was all inside Oscar Grant Plaza. So it was the teachers were definitely ruling the day on that occasion.
But that day, it was such a clear unity. I mean, this is the site, our City Hall, Oscar Grant Plaza, is where the marches, you know, against police brutality and murders have gone to, is where demonstrations go to in our town, is where people have stood up, you know, against racism and for equal rights in so many ways in the Occupy movement, all of that there. And it was, we were marching into the area. I mean, just the range of folks on the street, just seeing the march, instantly chanting with us, not just supporting, but many people joining the march. And you could see that connection, that this didn't feel like we just were allies or supporting each other, but this was clearly one struggle for the future of our city. And so many types of folks, you know, young Asian couples, folks from the Black community, random folks, and all kinds of people from Oakland just walking by, just, it's one struggle, and people got that, and people were standing up, were chanting, you know, stand up, fight back, and you know, all these different variations of that, and it was tremendously powerful.
Nice. Well, it sounds like it was pretty inspiring, and your spirits were high, and the community was really out there and supportive. So, talk about how the strike ended.
The end of the strike, Eon Bam, our caucus, was opposed to the way that the strike ended. I would say that we ended the strike with members really feeling like we did make some gains, and we got 10% retro on pay and some raises going forward. We got some of the we forced the board to negotiate on some of the common good demands. However, we could have won far, far more. And the problem was, and again, this is something that is happening more and more, that the picket lines were called down, were taken down at the point where the bargaining team signed a tentative agreement. In other words, there was no vote by the membership on acceptance or rejection of the tentative agreement prior to taking down the picket lines. And that was something that we really opposed, as you know, Eon Bam is a, you know, basic tenet of union democracy. And really, that's the most important decision that you make as a union member. That's one of the couple most important decisions you ever make. When do I go on strike? Do I accept the deal? You know, and if so, do we take down the, you know, when do we take down the picket lines? I mean, so once you take down the picket lines, I mean, the strike, you know, it's very hard to maintain strike. So yeah. that was my, you know, that I would say that's my criticism. And again, people, I would just tell people who are in, watch for this, because this is something that's being done in a lot of places, and we really have to fight it. We need a vote before we take down picket lines.
Yeah, I agree. We could have gotten a lot more than we got out of this, you know, the things, the common good demands. We need a lot more than what we got out of this. And I think if we had just held on just until the vote, we could have gotten them to cough up something better in just a day or two. We were in an incredibly strong position in the midst of, you know, a very extreme level of determination at the point that the picket lines were taken down. And so, you know, a lot of us were very angry about that violation of union democracy and saw that we could have gotten more. But I also do agree that we came out of this strike stronger than having not gone on strike, and certainly with a stronger contract than if we had not stood up to the district. It's just that, you know, when you fight, you want to fight to win and maximize your strength. And that means you don't go off the picket line until you vote on a contract.
And it is a short contract. So we may be out in strike in 2 years. Okay. That's the term of the contract.
Yeah, it seems like that's a common issue with, you know, celebrating and what have you after a tentative agreement is reached, rather than just continuing on until it's actually been voted on. So we're getting towards the end of our time, but talk about sort of overall what sort of impact did this experience have on you, and what have you observed from other folks who, you know, especially maybe newer, younger members, or maybe some of your students, I don't know. What has the impact been? Besides the wins, of course.
I can say something. I'll say two things. One, young teachers come to Oakland to strike. I think we get a lot of teachers that came here because they wanted to go on strike. Oakland has such a reputation. So they had a good time. I think it was very spirited. People came out in high spirits. Second, I think that the strength of that we've seen from the labor movement, from the union movement, and from the, you know, from civil rights fights like the LGBT plus struggles against the, you know, repressive trans laws, etc. But these kind of fights are the most important thing happening now to prevent a resurgence of Trump and the far right and fascist movement in this country. These, you know, having strong strikes like ours is absolutely puts us in a much, much stronger position to stop that from happening. So I'm very, very happy we did it. I'm happy it was so strong. And I think it's important to be looking at the wider picture for all of these struggles.
Yeah. And I mean, people just understood that you have to stand up for yourself collectively. And that's, you know, what a strike is, that there is no business as usual until we get a positive, progressive answer and solution for the, you know, the problems that our public schools are facing in this case, for the future of our cities, and for opportunities for our young people, even to just make this the country it's supposed to be of opportunity. You know, the school, Oakland Schools, has so many immigrant students who, you know, had to, many of them work during COVID, and, you know, and who need resources for newcomer programs that we could have gotten out of the strike. So I think the teachers are, you know, very proud that they stood up, but the fact that, you know, we haven't made as many gains as we could have is a problem, because, you know, we can, California is a rich state. California would be rich if it was a nation. I mean, we can really get the funding we deserve for public education if we continue, you know, with this strike wave, and if we really do take up the fights for public education strongly, as the common good demands were.
Great. Well, it looks like we are out of time. So thank you so much to both of you for joining us here on KBOO.
Thank you.
I also want to thank our audience for tuning in tonight. This is Steven Siegel. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 o'clock to catch another Labor Radio show. Thank you.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. We're talking